Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Talking About Pigs with SMEC, a podcast where individuals from SMEC discuss swine health topics. So I am your host, Dr. Justin Brown. I'm an assistant professor and swine veterinarian here at Iowa State University and with the Swine Medicine Education Center. For our new listeners, or as a reminder for those of you that are joining us again, this podcast is producer focused. So our episodes focus on a different swine health topic of interest to you, the pork producers. And our questions are generally generated from producer questions. So if you have a question that you would like more information on or for us to cover, please email us those at isusmec@iastate.edu. We'll also include some of these resources in the podcast notes so that you can dive further into our discussions. So today, we are going to discuss accurate teat assessments and how they can improve your herd productivity. And to discuss that with us today, we have Nikki Villalone. She's a third-year vet student here at ISU's College of Veterinary Medicine. So welcome, Nikki.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you here. Really interested in learning more about this project you worked on. But before we get to the project, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Where are you from? How'd you get to pigs? Yeah, what are you thinking about doing? So,
I'm originally from Southern California, and I completed my undergraduate degree at UC Davis, and I did that in animal science. I got a little bit of exposure there with pigs, so some research. It was like a nutrition research where we assess like non-spatial memory and developing pigs, and I also did some husbandry. Internships as well. But from that, I didn't really think I was going to do pigs at that point.
Sure.
Because after I completed my undergrad, I moved to San Francisco to work at a small animal general practice, urgent care as a veterinary assistant and technician. So when I got into veterinary school, I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to work with small animals, you know, like that's the path for me.
Sure.
And then I moved here and I was just exposed to so many different things. And, you know, like the more you learn, the more you start to develop a passion for other things too. So I was starting to move a little bit towards mixed animal practice.
Okay.
And I wanted to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. So there was an email that was sent out about a food systems fellowship that it was at Michigan State University, run under Dr. Wello. So I applied for that and I honestly forgot about it. And then a few months later, they emailed me saying, oh yeah, like congratulations. Like, you know,
it's yours.
Yeah. And I was like, I guess I'm moving to Michigan for 3 months. And that's what I did. So yeah, this past summer I moved to Michigan. And I was mainly working with Dr. Madonna Benjamin.
Yeah.
She said that she knows you,
dude. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's so cool. Yep. Yeah. Love her so much. She's amazing. And that was when I was essentially thrown into the whole pig world because the research was focused around farrowing week. And so, yeah, I worked a lot with the sows and the gilts and the piglets, and that was just so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, I thrive on adrenaline. So, yeah, I had a lot of, like, hands-on experience, which is like exactly how I learned and like completely fell in love with it. So then after that, I was like, I think I want to do pigs. Like, but I wasn't sure exactly how that was going to go. But I really wanted to stay in Iowa after I graduate. And I know that they have a lot of pigs here. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking like, might as well, you know, if I'm going to be staying here. And so, yeah.
Very good. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And it's always great when we can convert somebody over to the pig side.
Yes,
right?
So, yeah, love it.
It's great. And as you know, working with Dr. Benjamin, the pig world's pretty small community. So everybody kind of knows everybody or knows of everybody. So it's another benefit to this side too. And really fortunate for us to have you working on some of these projects, right? So, we'll talk about one of those here today. So you presented this at the Lehman Swine Conference for the Morrison Swine Innovator Prize, right? So that's awesome that you got to participate in that and cover an accurate teat assessment. So tell us a little bit more about that. What was the question you were trying to answer and what'd you find?
Yeah, so basically we were trying to figure out, like, what is a functional teat? Like, how are people defining that? Because there wasn't really much research on that specifically.
Sure.
And typically at farms, like farm staff or stock persons, they would, before they move the sows or gilts to the farrowing crates, they look at the underline and count the amount of teats.
Yep.
Before they put them in there, and they write it down so that they can move the piglets and allocate them to like different sows if they need to, like if they have more piglets than teats or vice versa.
Yep.
But so basically I wanted to see if that was really accurate. And so what we did was before farrowing, we kind of wrote down what the stock persons predicted.
Yep.
And we labeled that as good teats. And then for us, we labeled functional teats as a teat that produced colostrum, essentially.
Okay.
So if a teat was blind, if it had trauma, or if it didn't produce colostrum, then we labeled that as non-functional. And we performed that at farrowing. So we did our assessments right after they gave birth, so then we can have a more like accurate result.
Sure.
And so we, alongside that, I also measured the morphological changes over time.
Okay.
So I, on days zero, so pre-farrowing, days 3 and day 10, I measured the parenchyma volume.
Okay.
And I measured the samer, which is the distance between the teats. And yeah, I essentially did that on day 0, 3, and 10 just to see, like, the changes over time.
Sure.
And it was a good way to, like, keep track of the teats that were unfunctional or had trauma and see how they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I found was that when comparing the results, there was a 40% discrepancy.
Okay.
So 9 out of the 22 sows that had variable differences. And it was pretty varied because there were some that were underpredicted, some that were overpredicted. But actually, as of this morning, I was doing some data for Dr. Benjamin. And so I was looking at the predictions of the last two cohorts. And each of those had 23 sows each and gilts. And so one of them had like a 57% discrepancy.
Okay.
So 13 out of 23 of the sows. And then the other one that we just finished was a 30% discrepancy. So 7 out of 23. So there's definitely some, you know, variability between like
between
what is actually accurate. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like really, it's really important that a piglet has their own teat because, you know, they're most vulnerable, you know, between the first 12 to 24 hours of their lives. So that essentially dictates if they can live past that time. So
yeah, that's really interesting, right? That's a lot of variability.
Yeah,
obviously, right? And so and that percentage, right? So that 30 to 50% is within a cohort,
right?
And then about how many functional teats or good teats would they be off? Would it be like they miscounted by one, or they miscounted by two or more? Or did you look into that at all?
It was usually one, but there were some that were two as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But like you said, one or two mm-hmm. can make a really big difference in the survivability of pigs, right? Or
right.
if there's spots to crawl spots or more pigs onto that sow. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's really interesting. So as part of my research for my PhD, I milked a lot of sows,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's very different than milking other species,
yes.
as you know, right? And so, and not very rewarding.
No.
So, did you come up with any tips or tricks that producers might could use to check functionality of teats, right? And if so, what might those be?
Yeah, so one would be at farrowing is to check if there is any colostrum flow. But we were thinking to use a low cost paper that farm staff could use and could easily throw away. It's easier to use. It's clean so that they could put it in the pen, step in there really quick and then do a quick check. And then I feel like that would be an easy way for producers to do, to confirm that.
And by check, you just mean kind of strip the teat
yep.
and try to, express some colostrum
yeah.
that are there. Yep.
Because there were some teats that looked completely normal, looks like it could produce colostrum, but it actually didn't. Mm-hmm. And we were able to confirm that too, because, when looking at the morphology over time, the teats that were labeled as non-functional lost their parenchymal volume by like day 3 to day 10. So
sure.
it was kind of nice to see that. And then the teats that were had trauma when we were confirming if they had colostrum, they had variable changes. But yeah, that's pretty interesting to see.
Yeah, that is really interesting to see those actual physical changes in the mammary gland over time, right? And again, if that teat is one that a pig focuses on at the time of birth, right, and then it's not functional, that pig's obviously not going to do well. So, so yeah, getting accurate teat counts is really important, right? I think so. Yeah, that's really interesting and really good work that you've done there. If you had any tips or tricks for producers on doing this other than the paper, what would you explain to a producer about accurately assessing teat counts?
I think just like emphasizing how important it is to take that time, because I know it can seem really time consuming when you're trying to move the sows to the pens and do all these other stuff on the farm before farrowing starts. But like, I feel like that time is really critical because one, like it increases the amount of production for the farm. And like, if you think about it, like each unfunctional teeth that was mistaken as functional, like leads to morbidity of two piglets, and then vice versa. If like a functional teeth was labeled as unfunctional, that's like a missed opportunity to put a piglet on there. So I think just like taking that extra time to like actually evaluate it and looking at the teats would be better for them in the long run. Alongside the paper too, like maybe you could read, I know it's kind of hard to read too, but yeah, just like emphasizing that.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And so hopefully that's something our producers can take, right? And again, just emphasizing that point that accurate teat assessments is really critical for their herd productivity and piglet survivability. So really great work that you're working on there. I know you're working on some other projects. We won't talk about those today, right? But hopefully have you back on the podcast in the future to cover those. And you're going to present one at the American Association of Swine Vets Conference here in a couple months. So, and yeah, welcome to the swine world. Happy to have you here. Really looking forward to keeping you in the swine industry and seeing what you continue to produce in the future. So anything else you'd like to share with the listeners?
Oh yeah, I do want to say one more thing. When I was kind of comparing the gilts and the sows, there wasn't, because I thought that maybe like the sows had more variability differences than the gilts, but there was no difference between. I mean, it was a little bit, I think there were more variability with the sows more than the gilts, but essentially was kind of the same for both. So
no statistical difference.
I thought maybe it would be more accurate with the gilts because they're smaller and stuff, but no, there wasn't really a variability there.
No chance for previous trauma or things like that. And well, no, that's interesting too, right? That they can take this tool and do it across all parities, right? In the farm, they don't have to focus on a specific set or change how they're assessing one set or the other. So makes it a little bit easier in terms of that, right? That they don't have to implement a couple of the different protocols. So very good.
Yeah.
So awesome. Well, yeah, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks
really
for
appreciate
me.
It. Yeah. And like I said, hopefully we'll have you back to talk about the other projects you're working on. And again, for our listeners, if you have questions that you would like us to focus on or give you some updates on, please email us at isusmec@iastate.edu. That's isusmec@iastate.edu. And please put SMEC podcast question in the title of your email or the subject line to ensure that we receive it. Please share and watch for our next episode where we will discuss other swine health topics. Have a great day and a great week, everybody. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in. Special thank you to Iowa Pork Producers Association for their sponsorship of this podcast. Just a reminder that all the topics that we discuss in the podcast were brought to us from producers who are members of Iowa Pork Producers Association. We hope that these topics are useful for all pork producers in Iowa and across the U.S. alike. Thanks again for tuning in.